Happy Easter, everybody. Jesus is risen. My name is Dan. I'm one of the pastors on staff here, and it is a joy for us to have our Easter services. There's a whole gang of people in the back right there. So what we're going to do here is called the Heartland Squish. This is what we do a couple times a year where we just got overflow. There's space up front, everybody. But if you don't mind, if you're on the end and there's like seats in the middle, I'd love for you just to squish. That's why we call it the Heartland Squish. Go ahead. I love Easter, obviously, as a pastor. It's one of the greatest remembrances, one of the greatest days for us. It's a day about news. It's a day about good news. It's a day in which our souls get the news that we were always waiting for, that maybe we didn't know we were waiting for. Have you ever had to wait for news? Waiting for news is the worst. Maybe you auditioned for a part in the school play and they didn't tell you when the casting was going to be done, and so you auditioned and then you had to wait to see if you made it, or you bought a house, or you tried to buy a house, and you submitted an offer, or you submitted a resume, and you wondered, when will I hear back? Will I hear back? Will I get what I want? Waiting for news can be agony. It can be hard. In fact, today, I don't think we wait for news very long. We used to have these. This is a rotary phone. And we joked with one of our high schoolers that there's a special way to dial on this that we don't think you can figure out. And even this is the type of phone that, like, if you drop it, it makes the noise, you know, like the classic hang-up noise, you know? Waiting for news feels like a relic of time gone by. Because today, news doesn't wait. It breaks. It notifies. It tweets and it texts. News comes into our lives often uninvited, even. We find ourselves hearing news, receiving news. Gosh, you guys, this week, I became news. Here's what I mean. I was killing time the other day with my 9-year-old son. We went to a store to try and buy some baseball gear. And it was opening day. It was Thursday. It was opening day. And at Rally House was KMBC. Doing a news story on fans purchasing MLB gear. That's what I call a slow news day in Kansas City. And I walk in, and to be honest, I'm wearing slippers. I'm wearing a hoodie and a hat, and it's not even the right hat. I'm just wearing a hat, and my son and I just rolled out of bed, and I saw a camera, and I thought, oh, not today. No. News cannot make me news. And the cameraman came up to my son and I, and he said, would you like to be on the news? And I said, no. No, I would not. And my son looked up at me and said, Dad, I want to be on the news. And this cameraman, despite my, you know, fatherly prohibition, saying, no, you cannot put us on the news, he handed my son a microphone. And they had a nice chat about my son's favorite team. Do you want to see the clip of us on the news? It's so embarrassing, you guys. It's a short clip. Here you go.
Well, not all fans looking for gear on this day are Royals fans.
White Sox. Read the shirt, boys.
Our allegiances die hard, right? So we stick with our team.
Well, we'll see you next weekend in Overland Park. Alan Schoep, KMBC 9.
I'm never going out of my house in my slippers again. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes news makes us the news, and it's just unfair. And the craziest thing about it is once we were on, we had to then wait for the news to air. We had to go home and be excited about, like, when is it going to be on TV so we could see it. It's the most strange, strange thing. We're not used to waiting for news. We're not used to sitting and waiting to hear back from a place that's close to us. In fact, I think the only activity in our day and age that maybe comes close to reenacting the agony of waiting for news is if you've ever run a marathon. Anybody here ever run a marathon? Like the six of you in here have run a marathon. If you've ever run a marathon, you have participated in reenacting the spread of news. I don't know if you know this, but back in the early 400s BC, about 490, there was a battle in ancient Greece, the Battle of Marathon, in which the Greek army, the Grecian army, was repelling and attacked by the Persians, and they overcame the enemy. And a runner, a guy by the name of Pheidippides, it's such a great name, you got to say it out loud, Pheidippides, come on, say it with me, Pheidippides. Kids, can I hear you say it? Pheidippides. Yeah, I don't know what it means, but that was his name. Pheidippides, his job was to spread word that the Greek army had won. And Marathon, it's a little bit disputed, but Marathon is 25, 26 miles from Marathon to Athens. And Pheidippides ran the whole entire way, bringing good news to people who were waiting, bringing good news to mothers who had sent their sons off to war, wives who had sent their husbands off to war, kids even as young as 7 or 8 going out to the battlefield with their king, wondering, leaving this town, wondering, will they come home? Do we have a future? What news will we hear from the battlefield? And Pheidippides brought back with him the good news. He burst into Athens, and legend has it, he got to the throne room where everybody was waiting for this news, and he collapsed on the ground, and he said, "We won! We're victorious!" And legend has it that he died on the spot, which led a bunch of people from Greece to look at each other and go, "I think I could have made that run." And it's a tradition that's carried on to this day. A lot of people are like, "I could run 26 miles without dying." And that's what you do, running a marathon. It's a way of sharing the news from the battlefield. One other legend about Pheidippides is that the reason he ran so hard and so fast was because as the battle was winding down in Marathon, he looked out to the sea and there was a Persian ship that he saw changing course, and it started to head not towards land to send reinforcements. They had given up the fight, but instead they started to turn towards Athens. And Pheidippides knew that if they got to Athens before he did, all it would take for them to demoralize the city would simply be arriving at the port and getting onto the dock and saying, "Surrender, we have won the battle." And so Pheidippides said, "Not today. I will run. I will get there. I will bring good news to people because my people will not be deceived by a lie." And so he ran and he gave his life for the spreading of the good news. We don't have a word for this type of commitment or this type of spreading of news today, but almost every ancient civilization had a word that they would use to describe this battlefield report. The Hebrews called it bashar. It was this declaration that would go to the king, and it would go like this: "O king, you've won the battle. O king, you've been victorious. O king, you live forever. Because of the king, we have peace. We have freedom from our enemies. We are saved." That was the bashar. Isaiah, the prophet in Israel, just a couple years before the Battle of Marathon, he told the people in Jerusalem, he said this in Isaiah chapter 52, he said, "How beautiful are the feet of those who bring the bashar, the good news that our God reigns." Even the Greeks had a word for this. It was the word euangelion. Eu, like euphoria, means good. And angelion, like angel, it means message or word or announcement. The euangelion was the ancient way the Greeks would hear a report back from the battlefield that our king is alive, our king's won the battle, our king has saved the day. It was the good news. So when Jesus shows up a couple hundred years after the Battle of Marathon, a couple hundred years after Isaiah, one of his first acts publicly is to go to his hometown of Nazareth and to sit down in a synagogue and to take the scroll from Isaiah and to go a couple verses later in Isaiah chapter 60. Jesus sits and he declares this. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to proclaim the euangelion, to actually tell you that good news has come. And this good news, according to Isaiah, that Jesus was telling us about himself, he said it was to bring sight to the blind, and to bring good news to the poor, and to help those who had been imprisoned unjustly experience their freedom, and to proclaim that this is the year of God's favor. This is the euangelion. Jesus was saying, look, I know that what's going on right now might feel like God has abandoned you or left you or disappointed you. I know that you're struggling to worry about your future and to know what to do because you're locked in a battle. But good news, God sees. And God's here because I've come to share that God's alive. It was as if he was saying, I'm going to do something in your midst that was incredible, that was unlike anything else that's ever happened, that it's going to give you a future unlike anything you've ever dreamed about. A future of restoration, a future of freedom and prosperity and healing and flourishing. The religious people did not like this. It messed with Jesus, it messed with their categories in all the wrong ways. They couldn't understand Jesus, they couldn't sympathize with Jesus, they didn't relate to Jesus, they couldn't hear what Jesus was trying to say. To them, they thought God interacted and desired to be with people who are more like Ned Flanders, kind of uptight, by the book type of people. They couldn't hear that God was there for the downcast, the despondent, the disenfranchised. And so they plotted together to frame Jesus, to have him and his revolution be put to rest. There on Thursday, an army sees Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And they put him on trial and brought false witnesses to him. And Jesus, knowing that he came to do battle in this world, not against the rulers of this world, but against evil incarnate itself, a cosmic battle, Jesus refused to defend himself. Even when the Roman governor in the city of Jerusalem, a guy named Pilate, even when he looked at Jesus and said, if you're a king, where is your kingdom? Jesus looked back at him and said, my kingdom is not of this world because I proclaim news of the reign of God above every other kingdom. And Pilate had no other choice but to give the people what they wanted, which was to put an end to Jesus. And so Jesus marched to his battle. There on Friday, he was put on a cross. He was put to death. And while in many ancient times, mothers would send their sons off to battle, the mother of Jesus walked right there with him and watched her son suffer the agony of defeat. There his followers watched as the son of suffering gave his life up for many. There at the foot of the cross that Friday, their hope died. And Mary looked up and saw the future that she imagined her son was bringing into the world go dark and be clouded and to cease. The news that day was that the Jesus revolution was over. That there was no more future for it. That he was dead. And he was buried. And that was that. Have you ever been in a Friday in your life? A Friday where you don't know what's going to happen next. You have a hard time imagining the future. You don't see ahead, and it feels like the weight of the world has pinned you down. This is what Jesus' followers experienced. And this is what I experienced last Friday. Last Friday, my wife and I faced one of every parent's nightmares as we stood in the hallway of an ER here in town. As a doctor explained to us that the problems that our 9-year-old son was having were caused by a brain tumor. and that we'd have to be transferred to Children's Mercy Hospital, where we would become well acquainted with a pediatric neurosurgeon, two words I never thought I would ever acquaint with my life. And it was heavy. And we went and we waited in the middle of the night. We waited. Waited for our number to be called, waited for some news, waited to hear what was going to happen, waited with this precious child of ours. The whole time, my future was unraveling. The cloudiness of the moment overshadowed me. We waited. And waiting is hard. Finally, the doctors came and they took him into a procedure where they were going to help bring him immediate pain and try and figure out what to do next. And as he went into that procedure, Kristen and I went back to the waiting room. And we sat like this. And for hours, we said, God, help. This is dark. This is bleak. This is hard. I lived a lifetime in those hours. I cried an ocean in those hours. All I wanted was some news. All I wanted was to know that there's a future for my son. All I wanted was to see my kid hit a baseball down the left field line one more time. All I wanted was to hear his stupid little jokes. And finally, the surgeon came back to the room. And someone needs to teach brain surgeons how to have some bedside manner, because he walked in. And he shrugged. It goes like this. And he goes, yeah, it went fine. And I was like, fine. Like, how did it go? Like, we were on edge for hours. Like, how did, he goes, yeah, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. Everything was fine. Not exactly Evangelion, but in the moment, it felt like gospel. To me, it felt like hope. It felt like there's a chance that he'll be fine. And I want you to know that my son has had a hard week, but he's doing fine. And Kristen and I have had a hard week. We're doing fine. Even though we're still waiting for the news of what we're facing and what's going to happen, and there's still a tumor in my son's head. And I share all that with you because I want you to know. Sometimes pastors stand on stages on Easter Sunday and tell you some happy chipper news. And you wonder to yourself, is this real? Is this possibly this good? And I want you to know through my experience this week that I've been at Friday. I've been there, where all future is lost, where it feels like Jesus has been crucified. And I don't know what's around the corner. And somewhere around Tuesday, I've been praying for my son all week. And around Tuesday, I hear this voice in my head. I start wondering if maybe I have a brain tumor. It's a joke. All my jokes these days are about brain tumors. Sorry, guys. It's like gallows humor. But I hear this voice, and it says this. It says, I know how this story ends. It's a line from a song that we sing here at Heartland. I know how the story ends. And at first, I kind of shrugged it off. I pushed it aside. I was like, I haven't gotten the call yet. I don't know how this story ends. And again, like Field of Dreams, it came back. It was like, I know how the story ends. And I realized that this week, this Easter week, this precious week of hope, that my soul was reminding me of the good news of how the story of Jesus ends. Because like many of you, I know the story that Jesus doesn't stay dead. Like how many people know that like if the last day of your life is not the day that you died, there's hope. I know I said that funny, but like if you die and then you have more days, did you die? Yes, but did it matter? I mean, I don't know. There's a more to the story of Jesus, which means there's more to the story of my battle. And I was brought to this just so comforting Easter story where the women, they saw Jesus go into the grave. They buried him because that's what you do when somebody dies. You bury them. They put guards outside of his tomb so the Romans could tell everybody, yeah, he's dead and we've been watching him. And then that Easter Sunday, Matthew tells us, after the Sabbath, the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene, the other Mary, went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord, an angel, came down from heaven, went to the tomb and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning. His clothes were white as snow. And the guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. Jesus is in a battle, and even after he's resurrected, he's still kicking some butt. I love that. The angel says to the women, "Do not be afraid," which were words that I needed this week. I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. I know that you're looking for Jesus. You're asking yourself, where's Jesus in the midst of your battle? Where's Jesus? Where's Jesus? And the angel looks at the women and says, I know you're looking for the one who you saw on the cross, who actually died. You expect him to be where you left him because you expect his battle to be the last day and the last thing that he ever did. You buried him. You're here to eulogize him. You will etch his birth date and his death date on some marble and put that marble in front of this tomb because this is where the body of Jesus lay to rest, you think. But the angel says, it's not the end of the story. There is no tombstone for this tomb because the one who was in there is no longer in there. He's alive. He's not here, the angel says. He's risen. Come, see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, listen to this, he's risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I've told you. And so these women, they race back to tell the good news, the euangelion, that Jesus is alive, that our king is victorious, that our king has won the battle. And unlike Pheidippides, they feel more alive than ever because they have a future. They have a hope. And listen, if that was all this story is, if that was all this story was, that would be enough for me. If that, like, Jesus died on the cross for my sins, he was buried and he rose again, wouldn't that be enough? But there's something in the story that I just want to call your hearts to that arrested my attention this week. There's three "he is" statements that the angel makes. Three. The first is he is not here because an undead person doesn't stay in a place of death. Jesus was gone. He had moved along. The second thing is this, is that he is risen. He's not here, but he's risen. You don't have to worry if somebody stole him. He's actually come back to life. He's done the impossible. There's good news because he's alive. But here's the third thing. Here's the third thing that I heard that the angel said. He says, go tell his disciples that he's risen, that he's going before you. He's going before you. You'll find him in Galilee and you'll see him there. Go meet him. Go meet him there. And this is what I needed this week. This is the message of Easter. Is that we don't have just a Jesus who rose from the dead and conquered the enemy. That's good. That's great. I'm in for that. I've given my life for that. But what I love about Jesus is that he goes ahead of the disciples and promises to meet them in their future. there's this moment when every king would win the battle and send his messengers ahead into the city and declare the good news. And they would say, good news, everyone. We've been saved from our enemies. The king is victorious. The king's won the battle. Our king is alive, and he's coming. But not Jesus. Jesus wins the victory, and he leaves his messengers in the battlefield, and he goes ahead of them. And when the women get there to hear the message that they're not expecting to hear, the good news is that Jesus is alive, but also he's going to the place where you're going to be next. The place in your future down the road where you don't even know where you're going. He's there, and you'll see him, and you'll meet him. And oh, I feel like I'm preaching way better than you guys are looking at me. Because what this means for those of us waiting on some news is that no matter what you think you're going to find out in the days to come, no matter what you're battling against, the fact that Jesus goes before us and is a go-before-us kind of God, every battle we face is a battle he's already won. Every battle we face is a battle he's already been on the other side of it. It's a battle that he's not wondering how it goes. He's a battle that he's saying, look what I've done for you. You're safe, you're good, you're secure. You can hold on to me. The world has pinned you down, but I'm holding you up at the same time. Which means I don't have to be afraid. And you don't have to be afraid. My son doesn't have to be afraid. Because there's nowhere in this world that I can go where Jesus hasn't already been. Tomorrow, if I get news about my son, tomorrow, you know who's going to be there with me because he's there already? Jesus is already in the moment that I fear the most, holding me up, proclaiming good news. That our king is victorious, that he's won the battle, that he is alive, that he's safe. And this is Easter. Resurrection hope that shows up in your tomorrow because he's a God who goes before and wins the battle before you ever see it. Friends, I want to invite you to stand up with me right now because this is what we're going to sing about right here is the King Jesus who gives us hope in the midst of our battles, who today we remember the fact that all heaven and earth bows at the name of King Jesus who has conquered our greatest enemy, which is death itself. And I just want to invite you to pray with me right here, right now, and just say thank you to this King. Jesus, we come before you, God, me in a battle knowing that I need you so much, God. I thank you for the ways that this church has supported my family in these days. I thank you for the joy that we've experienced the past couple of moments and for this confidence, God, this hope that you're already there. You're the God who sees, goes before, who gives us a future when we can't see the future. And so, Jesus, we come before you right here and in front of all heaven and earth, we declare there's no one like you. Because you are not in the grave. You're alive, and you're meeting us here today. We love you, Jesus.
I moved to Vegas in August 2017 for bipolar disorder treatment. Vegas is chaotic. It's a very transient location. It is helpful at times when looking for mental health help. I actually found a doctor from Kansas who helped me find the right medication. But it wasn't a place that I ever saw myself settling down. I always saw myself coming back home. I just needed help first. I didn't understand why it had to be me, because I was like, I'm already dealing with a lot. I had an eating disorder for years, and I had already was dealing with that, and a lot of other mental health stuff. And it was just like, why add one more thing to my list? But then I realized over time, when I got better, I was glad it was me and not someone else because I handled it pretty well, I think. Yeah, I got mad at God. I did go through the grieving process. That was tough. I was glad it was me because I didn't do anything that I know some other people would have done in those circumstances. And that it never got as dark as it could have. I realized I wanted to come back home when I was in the car with an ex-boyfriend and he was telling me about his religious beliefs. And they did not align with mine. And it was just something clicked and I needed to come home. It was jarring when I realized I had to come home. I realized I had to call my mom, pack up all my belongings, and figure out a way to come back home, afford to come back home. Home has always been Kansas City to me. I was going to church with my mom. It was just farther away and out of her way to come get me. So one day she just told me, Celine, there's a church right by you. You should go to that one. I don't feel like driving to come get you. I was like, okay. So I just got dressed and walked over. There happened to be a hole in the fence, so I walked through that. And it's my little shortcut. I found home, I found friends, I found community. I'm in Bible studies, my second Bible study now. I'm doing this leaders meeting for a makers group for art. I'm just really happy that I'm involved now. I feel just good that I've got friends. I didn't have a community before, and I was looking for a community. And I knew there were a lot of communities out there. Not all of them were gonna be good. And I didn't want to pull a Vegas in Kansas. So, went to church. Reading my Bible has really opened up my life. I've been in Luke and Matthew recently, and John. And they're just really helping me figure out how to live life. How to pray, how to be, how not to be. And it's coming from God, it's coming from Jesus, it's not coming from another person. So I feel like it's reliable information. Health-wise, still bipolar, there is no cure, but medicated, take medication daily, 3 times a day, but I feel good. I feel happy, I feel confident. I'm glad I walked through it. And I see the silver lining in it, I really do. I always see the silver lining. That's what my mom taught me. I always see the silver lining. Even if it's a tin foil lining, it's still silver. I know even if I don't know what I'm doing or where I'm going, I'm not alone. And I felt very alone before. So I just feel like I got Jesus on the right side, God above me, Holy Spirit in me, and I'm just good to go. Following Jesus made it possible for me to expand my art and make friends. Feel confident enough to go to a building, a big building like Heartland, and feel accepted the first day. I used to be scared to leave my apartment alone, and now I'm not. I always feel happy because I've got Jesus with me. I learned the hard way my whole life. And now I feel like I've accepted God and the walk has just become easier. I just know it's gonna be okay. I don't know how I know, but it just feels like it's gonna be okay. Even if it's not okay, it will work itself out. That's just, God shuts a door, he opens a window.
I wanna thank Celine for sharing her story of the battle that she faces that Jesus has gone before her in so many instances and met her in her future and is leading her. And I've shared with you a little bit of my battle that I'm facing, and I would thank you for your prayers and for your support and all that stuff. But I want to ask you a question. I want to not leave this moment without acknowledging something. You know, if you haven't figured it out yet, we're a pretty open book church. A pretty transparent church, a pretty honest church, a pretty real church. Real life is too important to fake our way through it. And I know that Celine and I are not the only ones facing a battle. I wonder what yours is. I wonder where Jesus is intending to meet you down the road in your journey. Where his resurrection news might come to you today. Maybe you come like the women who came to the garden expecting to find a defeat. And you hear news of Jesus' victory, but he's already gone ahead of you. And so you're meeting Jesus today and finding out that whatever's in front of you will work out because you have him. That is good news for your battle. I know so many people that I've met over the past week have shared with me their stories of brain tumors and cancer and health diagnoses. I know that there's a lot of us. The good news of Easter is that Jesus is alive and is greater and will meet us together. But maybe you feel like you're coming today to a tomb in your life that is filled with a dead marriage or a dead relationship or a broken future that you cannot see around the corner. Maybe even worse, maybe even scarier than that, is that you come today and you don't feel like you're fighting any battles because life is fine. And brother, sister, if that's you, we are an honest church. We believe Nietzsche wasn't wrong when he said to be human is to suffer, because we follow the son of suffering, Jesus. It's the way of life. There's this moment that Paul, who when he addresses the church in Corinth, he gives them a whole entire chapter about how we prove that Jesus rose from the dead. It's incredible. I probably should have preached about that. You'd be a lot more like, whoa, let's go run through a wall for Jesus, right? There's this moment in 1 Corinthians 15 where Paul drops this random line. This is random line. He says that all of us are fighting a battle, but he says this, if I fight, this is what he says, if I fight wildebeests in Ephesus with only human hope, I have nothing. I don't know what it's like to fight a wildebeest. But if I fight my battles, the strongest battle that I could ever face, in the most crazy place that I could ever fight them, and all I have is my own strength and my own life, then that's not enough. I actually have nothing. I need the good news. I need the gospel. I need to know that Jesus is alive. And what I love about Matthew's account and Luke's account and John's account, they all agree that the women who went and saw Jesus that day became part of the news story of that day. And they took the good news and they brought it to the disciples. And indeed, they did see Jesus. And for generations, that's what we have been doing as a people who have seen Jesus too. I've seen Jesus this week, guys. I know his power, his strength, his comfort, his kindness, his goodness, his stability, his solid footing when it feels like the world's falling apart around me. I know him. And he can do this for you too. This is the good news of Easter, is that I don't hoard the gospel. The news is worth sharing, and I want to share it with you. I want you to feel this too. You can feel this too for the battles that you're facing. All you have to do is accept the fact that Jesus did die on the cross and he actually rose from the dead. To believe that news, that message that has been passed down for generations, the true news of Jesus. And rest in the fact that every battle you'll face in this life can be a battle that you approach through the victory of Jesus. Like Celine said, it doesn't fix everything. I don't know the outcome of my battle. She doesn't know the outcome of hers, and I don't know the outcome of yours, except that we can experience the grace and the freedom and the peace of the King who rules and reigns. And so I want to invite you, if you've never experienced that and you're looking at me and kind of cross-eyed and looking at me like, I don't get this, man, like this doesn't add up, you should be a wreck right now. Yeah, I should. Celine shouldn't have hope, but she does. And this room is filled with stories of people who have a sure footing to their life because they have faith in Jesus. And I'd love for you just to have a moment now to find this peace and find this hope right here, right now. If that's you and you're like, I need this in my life, Jesus, help me too. I'd love to just lead you in a prayer. You can just start a conversation with God and trust him with your life. I'd love for you to close your eyes and bow your heads, not because that's the way you're supposed to pray, but it's just a way for us to focus our thoughts and our attention upon God. So just with everyone bowing their head and closing their eyes, I'd just love to lead you in a prayer. If that's you, I'd love to just have you pray this to God. Talk to God just in a normal way you would your friend. Just say, Jesus, I'm facing a battle, and I realize that you've already won it, because Easter is the time when I see that you're alive. Make me alive. Resurrect my hope. Help me to trust in you, to follow you, and to look for you in the future, as I know you're waiting for me there. Thank you for hope. Thank you for dying for my sins. Thank you for the gift of new life. Friends, if that's you and you prayed that prayer, I just want to let you know that is one of the most incredible, important decisions you will ever make in your entire life. And I'd love for those of us around this room, those watching online, could you just give it up for those who right now have prayed that, to be welcomed into the kingdom of God, to accept the victory of Jesus on your behalf. It is a huge, huge deal. I'd love for us to stand. We got one more song before we go. We love you.